Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Mauro Marinelli. Marinelli is a photographer, artist, and former photojournalist. He earned a BFA in photography and English from Manhattanville College. In the late 1970s, he traveled around the U.S. to photograph the last of the original Italian immigrants. His resulting book, Old Timers, The Italians in 1979, was published by St. Martin's Press. He also published a collection of iconic cemetery images on Polaroid film called Burden of Wings. His most recent book is called Under Old Stars, Wanderings in Italian Hilltowns, featuring photos by Marinelli and prose sketches and poems by Rob Lloyd. It was published by Kir Verlag in the fall of this year. And welcome to the show, Mauro.
Hi, Tish. I'm glad to be here.
Now, I want to know what sparked your interest in photography in the first place.
I actually took photography at Manhattanville because I thought it was going to be a puff course and I wouldn't have to work very hard. But I had the good fortune of meeting my photography teacher, Sean Kernan, there. And he gave me first Eugene Smith, and then he gave me Robert Frank. And then I realized there is no puff. I slaved to light for the rest of my life.
Wow.
I was so fortunate to have him for a teacher.
Yes.
And my mentor.
So
I dedicated the book to him.
You just fell into it.
I fell into it. If those synchronistic kind of things are falling into it. But my star aligned with Sean. I dedicated the book to him.
Uh-huh.
He was my mentor, and he's been my friend for over 40 years.
Wow. How lucky when somebody finds something like this. Now your new book, Under Old Stars, Wanderings in Italian Hilltowns, was inspired by your uncle Peter, apparently, who, when you asked what he dreamt of, he said, "I dream of Italy when I was a little boy." I find that very compelling. Talk to us about your uncle. And
I had another photography teacher, Ralph Gibson, and he always said to try to find a project, that as an artist, the most growth is always through a project. You know, if you think of Monet's haystacks, for instance, mm-hmm. that was, in effect, a project. So I was really searching for a project, for something I could throw myself at. And sitting at the dinner table with my great uncle, Peter, he was 86 at the time, and I asked him what he dreamt of. And he said, "I dream of Italy when I was a little boy." And I said, "Oh, my God." So I went to Italy, not really knowing if that Italy still existed, but I was so fortunate to find it in the little hill towns. And I stayed true to that theme. When you look at the book, you'll see there's no cars. I tried to photograph his dreamscape, and it was still existent. I found a priest with the old Vatican hat. I found haystacks that, like I said, Monet's haystacks, they were from 1890, but they were in a current, present Italy. It very well could have been in his dreamscape.
Wow, that is so amazing. When did you actually take this trip to Italy, and how long did you stay?
I took four separate trips, and I would go to towns that were so small that there wouldn't be a hotel or a pensione, so I would go to the priest. I would explain to him the nature of the project, and he would know a widow or some family whose kids had gone on to a bigger city. And I would stay in a house that is called affitcamera. You would rent a room, and I would rent a room in their house, and they would give me coffee in the morning, and I would set out. The towns had 300 people, and pretty much I would spend a month in each town. You could pretty much photograph everybody in town. And as you were walking up the street, everybody knew who you were because it was so small, and they would grab you and pull you in the house. If you hadn't photographed something of them, then you were getting pulled into the house. And
wow.
They wanted you to photograph them. There's a photograph of a woman on her deathbed. They wanted me to photograph her.
Wow, that's amazing.
It was such a privilege. And the level of trust. I think once the priest vouched for you, you were given the blessing of an initial trust, and then you had to earn everything else on your own. But by the end of the month, it was all like family. It was really just wonderful.
Oh, what a great experience that must have been. So when you were trying to reenact your uncle's dreamscape, did you have photos that he had from the small towns he was from or not?
No, obviously as an artist, you take that artistic license. I just tried to imagine what would have been around at the turn of the century and tried to stay true to that. But it was such a... Again, I was so fortunate to have my teacher, Sean Kernan. His photographs, assignments were just so eclectic that I was really prepared to almost shoot. So I shot portraits, I shot still lifes, I shot landscapes, And if it hadn't been for Sean, in a way, through his really eclectic assignments, I was able to put all of that experience into one book.
Oh, it's an absolutely astonishingly beautiful book, I must say.
Oh, thank you.
It really is. And it almost feels like you left yourself out of it in some way so that you could let the landscape be itself, which I love. So many photographers are trying to manipulate stuff.
No, and it's so easy to be lost in Italy and with the Italians and in the landscape that... it's very easy to lose yourself and not have it ego-driven.
Yeah. Did you use almost all natural light? I didn't notice any that looked like flashes.
When I used to shoot for newspapers, all the other photographers made fun of me because I walked around with a tripod. I hate flash.
I do, too.
I just so love natural light. And again, Ralph Gibson, the other photography teacher that loomed large in my life, told me and other students not to bother looking at photographs. Photography was a young art. He said, go to the painters. The painters have been doing it for 450, 500 years. He said, they've already worked all this out, so why waste time with photography? Go to them. And so from that, I learned about light, really, from Edward Hopper, Andrew Wyeth.
It was two of my favorite painters. I understand that light.
Yeah. The cover of the book is based on an Edward Hopper painting. It's called By the Seaside. It's at the Yale Gallery, you know, and I took his advice, and that was really good advice to go to the painters.
Oh, absolutely. You can see it in every print in this book. Now, how did you end up with this collaboration with Rob Lloyd? His narrative and the poetry, he uses Thomas Tranströmer's poems, which I love.
Yeah, so do I.
Yeah.
I've known Rob Lloyd for 40 years. Also, we've had a long friendship. And he used to edit a poetry magazine called Durak, and I shot all the covers. I photographed Mark Strand and James Tate, William Pillen. So I had always loved poetry, could never really write poetry, but loved it. And I always loved how similar poetry or haiku was to photography. And we had discussed this book. There was this book by Hermann Hesse that I loved called Wanderings, and it was Hermann Hesse's favorite book. Hermann Hesse walked from Switzerland to Austria, and he made little pencil sketches and wrote poetry. So each format of the book is on the left was a sketch, and on the right was the prose poem or actual poem. So when I showed this to Rob Lloyd, he loved the format also. And so we tried to... His poetry doesn't really illustrate my photography, and my photographs aren't about his prose pieces, but in the DNA of both of them, they're connected by what we experienced by going to Italy.
Yeah, it sounds like you reached into each other's heads just like you did your uncle's past.
Exactly.
You know? It was really interesting.
And he knew right away. When I said what I wanted to do, he understood it. I didn't have to explain it twice.
You know what I find so compelling about these photos, too? I have been to Italy, but these photos almost make it look like time stood still for you, and you really were photographing in the past. Did you feel that? Did you feel ghosts in those towns?
Well, ghosts is a great way to do it. I really kept my uncle in the back of my mind. He had already died by the time I was in Italy. But I tried to keep that, my experience with him. He was a beloved uncle. He ate dinner with us every night. And I tried to just keep him, his presence with me as I walked through, sort of, not as a ghost, but sort of like a guiding force. Mm-hmm. And tried to stay true to the original concept and not vary from that. And I think that's why it worked.
Yeah. No. It looks like it to me. It's absolutely, it's haunting.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
It's really haunting. And, I assume that you're glad that it's haunting because it calls your attention to so much.
I always like the idea of something leading to something else. And so I hope that these photographs are strong enough to want to make someone else want to then do something. You know, I think of pictures at an exhibition being inspired when Mazursky went to an impressionist show. Mm. And so I hope that these photographs are haunting enough to make someone want to go out and create art someplace else in some other place.
But you're also preserving an idea in some ways.
Yes. So. No, I agree. Probably this Italy is disappearing as quickly as the new world corrupts the old.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I was thinking that as well. Now, when you segued from photojournalist into a fine art photographer, did you change anything about the way you approach your subjects? And how did that happen?
I had to make a living, so it was hard to walk around as being a fine arts photographer. But my training really was as an art photographer, and all my teachers, they were all fine art photographers. There's just no doubt about it. But I had to make a living, so I did commercial work. I've shot for IBM and Xerox, and then I did a lot of photojournalism. I shot for the New York Times and Attenzione magazine. So I was able to mix and match, and some magazines give you enough leeway that you could bring your art experience and have them understand it and do a beautiful photograph.
Yeah.
Other times they just edited it. Your photograph to death, and it was just whatever.
Wasn't even something that came from you. Well, I know, because a lot of photojournalism is fine art to me. You know how that in Europe they publish that World Press photo book of the award-winning photographs from around the world. Those are gorgeous, most of them. So, you know, it does intermix the journalism and the fine art, and you can certainly see it in your stuff.
Well, you're always blessed if you have an editor who, sometimes they hire you. And they understand why they hired you. And then some hire you thinking that they're going to change you. And so if you have you're blessed with an editor that understands your work, he'll be respectful of it. So those are the editors you want to look for.
Yeah, those are the ones that help you create something as beautiful as this book, too.
Exactly.
Now you shot this book in black and white, which I find a lost art almost. I can't believe people aren't still doing it, you know, across the board. And you said that you became a slave to the light as a photographer. Talk to us about that. And this could have only been shot in black and white. Don't you agree?
I couldn't even imagine where I would have started this in color. I think color just would have gotten in the way.
Yeah.
So when I say a slave to light, I almost feel phototropic. You know, that if I see a beam of light on the wall, I'll turn to that direction, like sunflower almost.
Uh-huh.
But certainly phototropic would be a good word to describe how I feel about light. Everything in photography is about light. And I think, you know, when I shot the Burden of Wings, that Polaroid camera cost $40. You know, some people always ask me, what kind of camera do I use? And I, not to be snotty or anything, but what camera you use doesn't really matter.
You know, Ansel Adams said that. If you have the talent and have the composition and the light in your head, you can use a shoebox camera.
That's exactly right. So it's not, I shot that whole book of Polaroids with a $40 camera, and it didn't matter what I shot the Under Old Stars with. It was the understanding of the light, and you try to find a medium that's going to accentuate how you think. So if the black and white is the way to go, you know, your art, writers often say their characters in a novel take over the writing. Well, when you're shooting photography, the medium, the black and white, you know, the medium tells you what to use, and you shoot in color and it doesn't work, then obviously you're going to black and white because you want to be heard.
Yeah. Did you have to get, you know, releases to publish any of these photos of people's faces? Like in the old days, we used to have to get model releases.
I probably should have.
You didn't, though.
But I didn't, and I think only just because it was in Italy, and I don't think they would have ever thought to say, well, you know, I'm going to sue you because you put me in your book. They were just so delighted when I mailed them photographs.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Mauro Marinelli. He's a photographer. We're talking about his new book, Under Old Stars, Wanderings in Italian Hill Towns. Now, how did you find these hill towns anyway? Did you actually go where your uncle was originally from? Or?
With my nose.
Really?
I landed in Rome. Rented a car, and I just started driving until I found something that felt right. I truly followed my instinct and my heart. And we came on a town, and the old men were dressed in capes. And I almost fell down. And I said, this is it. So I went there. I saw there was no place to stay. I knew right away to go to the priest. And I went to the priest, and he said, okay, and he took me. But
what were these capes?
You know, I was so stupid. I asked if I could buy one. Their wives made them, or they were passed down from their grandfather or father. There's a photograph of a man in one of the photographs is of that, a man in a cape. He's in an archway with a beam of light on his face and this beautiful shadow behind him. And when I saw that, I stopped and I knew this is where to start, where to dig in, where to plant the first seed. It took my breath away.
Oh, God. The photographs in the book can tell that you were in awe during half of this trip, I'm sure, at least.
I appreciate how sensitive you are to that, because some people just blow through the book, but I know that you saw what I saw.
Yeah, well, it's because I'm still so entranced by black and white photography and old Europe. And, you know, I mean, it's all there. All of that is there. Now, did you produce these the old-fashioned way? Did you actually go into a dark room, put them into chemicals?
Well,
how did you produce this?
The book is actually, it is shot in the old school in that it's shot on film.
Mm.
And so the darkroom part of it wasn't that I printed the photographs. Yeah, in a dark room, I digitized them. So the chemistry was in developing the film, but thereafter I scanned them at a high resolution scan and did everything in Photoshop, and they're printed on archival paper. You know, on an archival photo printer. So it's a nice mixture of old school and new school.
Yeah,
I worked extensively in dark rooms and. What you can do in Photoshop is just not even possible. So you can do such little tweaking as to finish the photograph in a way that never, like you can enhance just a little beam of smoke coming from a cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see it, and hopefully other people will, but yeah, you never would have been able to do that in a dark room. So
yeah, oh yeah, it's beautiful. It looks like some of those old photography books from the 60s that I have.
Oh, it's that wonderful. That lovely grain of Tri-X.
Oh, it's just beautiful. Now, you have photographed cemeteries. You have a collection of old Italians that were fading, you know, with age. It feels like the photojournalist in you is trying to capture a time that's already gone. Did you feel almost like a historian?
The old-timers, the Italians, I was watching a documentary on Edward Curtis, who photographed the last of the Indian Native American tribes.
Mm.
And I realized the same thing was happening true for the Italian-American, the immigrants. So I borrowed really the concept from Edward Curtis, because you're right, I did know that needed to be preserved. And, you know, the book on Italy, I wasn't trying to preserve a memory of Italy. I was trying to stay true to just thematically to what I thought my great uncle would have seen as a boy. I just was so entranced by that idea of an older man at 86 dreaming of Italy when he was a little boy. I mean, you could write just wonderful poetry or photography, or it can take you anywhere if you just let the muse give you that little push onto that road. So not particularly as a photojournalist, but I'm working on my next book. It's called Five Disciplines, mm-hmm. all black and white again. But in Five Disciplines, I think I can finally just do pure art photography. So it's going to be 15 portraits as one discipline, 15 nudes as one discipline, 15 landscapes, 15 photographs of just light, and then 15 photographs of photographs that I call them nebulae, thinking of the word in Italian nebbia, which means fog, ones that are like transitional photographs, ones where you can kind of see things changing in the photograph itself from one state to another. So that's what I'm working on now, really as a pure art photography book.
And are you going to travel around to do that? And where did you come up with the number 15 for each?
Well, I try to, you know, the five disciplines is just five things that I could see that my groups of art photographs broke naturally into.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm planning on going to the Azores in the spring.
Whoa.
And I thought that, you know, those little tiny islands have, some of them have no more than 1,500 people. I could certainly round out parts of that book for portraits and beams of light. And, you know, they talk about how extraordinary the light in the Azores is. So, you know, laying out any kind of book, photography reads sort of like a paragraph. And so you'll lay all your photographs and you see you're missing verbs here and you're missing subjects here.
Mm-hmm.
And so you do infill. So I have this project of the five disciplines all laid out on the floor, and I kind of know what areas I need to shoot in. So I just need to go to some interesting place where I can dig in. And so I'd like to go to the Azores in the spring for a month and dig in again.
Oh, that sounds fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. I was wondering how planned out, you say it's good to have a project or an idea that you can move out on. I was wondering how planned it was. You know, you decide you're going to go to little towns in Italy. Did you just have a concept in mind, or did you just let, whatever happens, it's going to be my project?
Well, I did try. You know, when I did get there, I really wasn't sure if it even existed.
Mm.
I just, the first trip, I really didn't know what I was going to find, and it could have just, not that any trip to Italy is a waste of time.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
You know, I was lucky to find what I was looking for, and I think it's always good, you know, any artist, you need to follow your instinct. And so if your instinct is leading you someplace, whether people recognize from the get where you're heading, you should have enough faith and belief in yourself to follow your instinct, follow your heart, and I'm pretty sure that great forces will rise to help you get to that place.
Yeah, it looks like that has absolutely worked for you.
I have such faith in that.
Yeah, I can see that. Well, you have to. An artist has to have faith. And you have to, you know, get rid of the censor in your head and let the world, you know.
Well, Philip Glass says that he doesn't write music. He says he sits down, takes out his pencil, and he listens. And he just waits to hear the music, and then he starts transcribing. And I think any artist could take that as really good advice, because you're walking down a street and you're just waiting to look for that photograph, and you just have to remain open.
Yeah. As you said a few minutes ago, you do write poetry. You have a poem in the New Healing Muse magazine for 2016, and you also have a whole bunch of photographs. Now do you often submit your photographs to be printed in journals like this, or was this a new deal?
I found out about the Healing Muse, and this was the third issue I was in. I've never had any poetry published, and so I don't even know where it came from. You know, I don't know where it came from. So I submitted it, and I was so shocked that they said yes that I thought, wow, did I just fool them? But I've gotten so many compliments.
Oh, it's a wonderful poem.
Oh, thank you. Coming from an established poet like yourself, what a compliment.
but your photographs are so gorgeous, too. I mean, you know, folks who haven't seen this book that we've been discussing, get a copy of The Healing Muse and look. We got five photographs.
Six photographs in this issue.
It's remarkable. I was so astonished to see such beautiful, fine art photographs.
Oh, thank you.
In a magazine.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I have photographs. There's a new... the initial issue is called the Light Journal, and it's this woman in New York who started a new magazine just for black and white photography and poetry. So I submitted five nudes to that, and they took them all, and I was stunned. And so it's online. It's called the Light Journal, and the next submission date is the middle of December, and the subject is called Dwell. So if you have poetry or photographs along the concept or theme of Dwell, send them in.
Yeah, that sounds really... So is this a new avenue for you to be having things published in books?
You know, to tell you the truth, they invited me, and I don't know really where they got my name, but I was so... When I saw that, and I think the first theme or subject or assignment was on being human, that I submitted five of my nudes, and they took them. I was really, really pleased.
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of artists and photographers don't think of these avenues. They think of exhibits or selling their work at different events. But, you know, there's still so many literary journals who are publishing all this art.
It's just the idea of getting it out into the world. Otherwise, it's sort of like creating in a vacuum. And I think it's encouraging, not because you'll never be famous doing this. You'll never get rich doing this. But I think your idea is always to communicate something to someone else and have it move forward. Mm-hmm. I know they talk about paying it forward, but really you hope that you touch someone that they then want to go out and create something.
Yeah, yeah.
What an honor that is to be in a position to offer that to other people.
Oh, that's such a great attitude. You know, I mean, a lot of people do think they want to become famous or they want to make a lot of money realistically.
What a mistake that is. Yeah. You know, there's that Kabir poem about Kabir finding this ruby of consciousness. And it talks about other people thinking that this ruby was lost. But it said that Kabir knew right away what it was. And he took that ruby and he wrapped it in his heart's cloth. That's what the gift of art, if you've been endowed with a gift or you're nurturing a gift of art, wrap it in your heart's cloth and move forward. It's a jewel that you can give other people.
Yeah, and that gives people an attitude adjustment to tell them that, right? Because this is a culture where we want, you know, we admire people who make a lot of money or become famous. You know, this is a celebrity culture that we're missing so much.
Oh, it's just such a privilege to have somebody look at your photograph and to be inspired by it.
Yeah, and I want to ask you one final question.
Please.
Do you do commissions? I mean, I know you said you had to make a living as a photojournalist. Do people hire you to do portraits of their grandmothers and things like that?
I've never been asked, but I mean, you know, I've done assignments before, but I think I'd be more inclined, if someone wanted a picture of their grandmother, I would do it for nothing. I'd say thank you for asking me to do it, and I'd be happy to photograph them.
That's wonderful. That is just wonderful. We're almost out of time, Mauro. Can you give us some website information, contact information?
I have a website. It's just mauromarinelli.com, and there's excerpts from all the books, including the first book, and there's some beginning photographs of the new book, Five Disciplines, there. So.
And when do you think that Five Disciplines book might come out? Next year?
I'm hoping next year. Mm. I'm shooting to have it ready for fall of 2017.
It doesn't have a title.
Five Disciplines.
It's going to be called Five Disciplines. Well, we will really look forward to that.
No, thank you.
And what about any exhibits? Any exhibits or talks coming up
I have two photographs at the Tompkins County Public Library as part of the Smithsonian show about being human. I have two paintings at State of the Art Gallery now, and one painting at the Community School of Music.
Wow.
So there's three places right now.
That's great. Well, it sounds like Mauro Marinelli is everywhere. thank you so much for joining us. Again, I have been talking to Mauro Marinelli. He's a photographer, and we've been talking about his incredible new book called Under Old Stars, Wanderings in Italian Hill Towns. Thank you, Mauro.
Well, thank you so much.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outoboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.